Good morning, Oregon. Thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Audio Edition podcast, which every day brings you, well, every weekday anyway, brings you a new story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Well, you'll find the full details of all this stuff at offbeatoregon.com, our anchor page. Do check that out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the Coast Guard's dramatic rescue of Stalin's most notorious gulag ship. Well, it wasn't Stalin's gulag ship at the time, of course. It was a Norwegian freighter. Norwegian freighter called the MV Childar. Yes, MV. It was actually a diesel-powered ship. Very modern for 1934. Got off course, piled onto Peacock Spit. A Coast Guard cutter pulled it off, and motor lifeboat crews rescued its crew, and then they managed to tow the wallowing ship to port and repair it. Sounds like a happy ending, huh? Well, not for the Russians, it wasn't. Here's the story, which, by the way, was first published on May 1st, 2011. It was very early in the morning of May 4th, 1934. On the bridge of the Norwegian cargo ship MV Childar, Captain Matheson was noticeably and uncharacteristically nervous. True, anyone would have been a bit on edge. His ship, a modern 4,100-ton diesel-powered freighter, was passing just off the mouth of the Columbia River, a notoriously dangerous place, and there was a full gale buffeting the ship from the southwest. Still, Matheson was an old salt. He'd slept through worse storms than this. What could it be that was bothering him today? A moment later, a slight change in the sound of the sea made it perfectly clear what was bothering him. Instantly he knew. The wind had shifted, the Childar had blown off course, and he and his crew were quite possibly about to die. The sound he heard was breakers. By the time you hear breakers from the bridge of a 328-foot freighter, it's too late to do anything about it. Matheson didn't even have time to yell before the Childar plowed onto Peacock Spit. A massive breaker sealed the deal by thundering down on its decks, now tipped at a crazy angle facing the sea. Matheson and his crew ran out on deck. The breaker had removed all the lumber stacked on the deck, along with one of the two lifeboats. The other one had almost gone overboard as well. Desperate to secure the other lifeboat before another heavy wave took it away, a half dozen crew members, along with the first mate, ran out to tend to it. While they were doing this, another massive comber descended on them and buried the ship in water and foam. When it receded, three men were missing, including the first mate. Another was dead on the deck, crushed by the lifeboat, and three more were badly hurt. The lifeboat itself was smashed. The Childar's surviving crew members were now stuck. Their only hope lay in an emergency radio call to the U.S. Coast Guard. Unlike the Childar, the Coast Guard cutter USS Red Wing was a steam-powered ship, so it had to build steam before it could race to the rescue. So it was 11 a.m. before it got to the scene, 4 hours after the SOS had first been transmitted. By now the Childar was in rough shape. Everything that could be swept off the deck had been swept off the deck. Masts, cargo, pieces of superstructure. There was a big hole below the waterline, but the lumber in the hold was keeping the ship afloat. When the Red Wing's commander, Lieutenant A.W. Davis, caught a glimpse through a momentary break in the fog, a massive breaker was sweeping completely over the stricken ship. The Red Wing tried to get a steel tow cable onto the Childar, but the freighter had lost power and the winches were useless, and the crew couldn't manage the steel by muscle power alone. So a 12-inch hawser was launched with the line cannon, and a dozen men fought to muscle the massive waterlogged hemp line onto the bits. Then the Red Wing dragged her off the reef. The Childar floated wallowingly, listing to starboard, looking as if she would sink at any moment. Matheson, however, said via radio that he thought the ship could hold together long enough to be towed to a port. However, the three injured crew members needed to get to a hospital fast. Could the Coast Guard manage to take them off? It could. Two motor lifeboats were already on their way. One of them, the one coming from Cape Disappointment, was piloted by Chief Bosun's mate Lee Woodward, who wasn't in much better shape than the men he was planning getting ready to rescue. A massive wave had boarded his boat and pinned him to the engine room bulkhead, breaking several ribs. Those old-school motor lifeboats were bad for that. Fighting through the pain, he pressed on. The injured men were lowered on stretchers while the motor lifeboat pilots held their tiny craft steady alongside and crew members stood out on deck to receive their injured cargo. It's hard to overstate how difficult something like this is. A moment's inattention to the oncoming sea would have resulted in the boat being smashed against the side of the Childar or drifting wide and losing the injured men into the sea. The engine had to be rhythmically and carefully managed to keep the boat from sliding down the sides of each wave as it came and went. But the operation went off perfectly with both lifeboats. Then the Red Wing started the long, arduous task of towing the stricken freighter to Seattle. There was no way that it could be dragged across the bar into the Columbia with the seas so big, riding so low in the ocean. It took several days to do it. The Childar had lost its rudder and did not want to track straight in the water. Under the influence of the southwest wind, it yawed out behind the Red Wing and had to be essentially dragged sideways through the sea. Halfway there, it showed signs of breaking up, and most of the remaining crew were evacuated. And then, the Red Wing almost lost the tow line when the bits tore out of the Childar's battered deck. As they inched their way up the Washington coast, the weather moderated. Then, around midnight on the last day, the Red Wing got a wireless message from the Childar behind it. "Good for you. Think we'll make it now," the apparatus beeped, or sparked, rather. The following morning, the vessels were in the protected waters of Puget Sound, and the fight was over. 26 mariners had been snatched from certain death, and their ship, although heavily damaged, was saved as well. What the ship was saved for, though, was not so pleasant. After its repair, the Childar was eventually sold to a company from the small Baltic nation of Latvia. When Joseph Stalin's Soviets took Latvia over, the ship became Russian property. It was pressed into service as, essentially, a slave ship. In the years after World War II, more than 1 million people, political prisoners mostly, were loaded on ships like the Childar, which was now renamed the Sovetskaya Latvia, and hauled to a place called Kolyma in northeastern Siberia, accessible only by sea. Kolyma was where Stalin's most notorious and deadly and awful gulag was located. It was one of the biggest movements of humans by sea in history, and quite possibly the most brutal, its conditions rivaling and possibly exceeding the worst abuses of African slave ships in the 1700s. In 1962, the aging freighter took its last voyage, heading to Kobe, Japan, where it was unceremoniously scrapped out. That's it for today's episode. And if you're listening for the first time and want some more information about Offbeat Oregon history, well, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. That's the complete listing of 200 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and links to the Facebook page and Twitter feed in case you'd like to join the conversation. The website's also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which for today's episode include works by Martin Bollinger, Carl Barslog, and Ralph Anders. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis anytime? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. In fact, drop me a line even if you're not coming to Corvallis. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license, attribution, share alike. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. That's it for today, Monday, December 3rd. And coming up tomorrow, on Tuesday, we'll be talking about the almost ghost town of Granite, Blue Mountain Boomtown, that boomed and then busted. For a little while there in the 1970s, it was Oregon's smallest incorporated city, population 1. In fact, its mayor liked to joke that Granite had a Republican administration, because, of course, that was his partisan affiliation. So look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. In the meantime, go on and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.